The Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue is open. Good morning. We're going to start with some work sessions for purposes of moving some bills to the Tax Credit Committee. So Senator Boquist would start with 793.
We have to have a public hearing. We haven't had one.
I'll open up a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 793. Go ahead, Chris.
Speak quick or forever hold your peace. Shotgun marriage.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 73 creates a personal corporate income tax credit for investments in capital projects. The credit is 100% for projects that are energy efficient or ADA compliant, and 50% of certified costs for all other projects. The credit is up to $50,000 for a home project, and $500,000 for a business facility. It's non-refundable and may not be carried forward. If the certified costs are more than $100,000, the credit is taken evenly over 4 years, and the minimum amount of capital improvements required to be eligible are $5,000 for a home and $25,000 for a business facility. The bill would require construction or implementation to begin before September 1, 2015, or the effective date of the bill, whichever is later, and applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2015.
Okay. Senator Ferrioli is here to testify on this bill, or was it the bill from yesterday that you're here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry, I couldn't read.
For the record, State Senator Ted Ferrioli here in support of Senate Bill 793. I think the legislative revenue staff has very adequately described what the bill does. It's just an unabashed attempt to stimulate construction for homes and businesses, particularly if they're doing ADA compliant work or energy efficient work. So our attempt here is just to try to create an incentive program that will spread the benefit throughout Oregon to all communities. It'll help the construction industry, both residential and commercial. So we're very grateful if the, in the committee's wisdom, it moves this measure down to the committee that is engaged in comparing all of these tax expenditure measures. This to us seems like a great investment and a real incentive for an expansion in the construction trades, not just in the urban areas, but throughout the state of Oregon.
Questions of Senator Ferrioli?
Is there additional testimony?
Yes, there is. Okay, okay, sir, we'll get you to stand by. John Chandler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, here in support of Senate Bill 793. And notwithstanding the name of our organization as the Home Builders, we also represent remodelers. In fact, we believe we are accounting for probably our membership accounts for probably 90-some-odd percent of all new homes and remodeling that goes on in the state of Oregon. This bill would be very important to us. The market is coming back on the new house side, as I'm sure you've seen, in terms of prices. The market has not come back in terms of production. We still are staffing up. We're still, are a lot of my guys around the state, particularly as Senator Ferrioli pointed out, in smaller areas, are still struggling. There's a variety of reasons for that, which I'll be happy to go into if you like. But the bottom line is our industry, which used to employ many thousands of people more than it does, is not yet robustly recovered. A bill of this sort, which is, I think, fairly narrowly tailored, is only for ADA compliant, for energy efficiency, which are two broad social policies the state's in favor of, giving a tax credit for remodels and improvements in both residential and commercial construction that would help advance those, makes sense. There was a similar bill introduced in the House last time. It got a little bit of traction. I hope it gets more traction this time. We could really use the boost. We were a significant portion of the Oregon economy back before the crash. We would like to get that status back. I think you, as legislators and recipients of state tax revenue or expenditures, guardians of state tax revenue, would like to have us get that status back. We believe this bill would help. I commend it to you. Be glad to take any questions.
Thank you. Can you give us a sort of a hypothetical composite where this would work, how the credit would be engineered on a home, a residential facility, and a business facility? So walk us through.
Mr. Chairman, the I didn't realize it'd be a quiz.
Sometimes I know it's crazy.
Book.
We ask
Thank
questions
you.
Sometimes.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. I always wanted to sit next to Senator Greeley on the final. Let's use energy efficiency, for example. If a home is being remodeled to add rooftop solar or a geothermal system or high-efficiency hot water heating or any of a number of things that would raise the energy efficiency of the home, reduce its energy load, under this bill there could be a credit up to a certain amount. Obviously, that amount yet to be determined. The bill has a number in it, as I remember, but I'm sure other committees might fiddle with that. That would help incent that homeowner to have that improvement done. That would be work that would not otherwise happen, presumably, because those things can be very expensive. And even if they would have been done, the neighbor might now do it because the credit is available. So I think the walkthrough would simply be it provides a state incentive for things the state says it wants. Same thing with ADA compliance, which in new construction is fairly easy to do when you're building a house. If you're retrofitting an older house or an older office building and making it ADA compliant with wider doors and ramps and such as that, it can be outrageously expensive. This would help offset the cost of that. And again, it's a broad social goal that we want to have our structures available to people that are not able to walk up and down stairs.
Mr. Chairman, in order to qualify for the tax credit, the residential remodel must be at least $5,000. For a commercial building, it'd have to be at least $25,000 to even qualify. And what's interesting about that is if you look at a solar system, you can easily spend $5,000 or more on a solar system. A photovoltaic system, which doesn't qualify for the same sort of tax credits as a solar system, might be four or five times that much. So, you know, in incenting these energy efficiencies, we're taking into consideration things that currently don't qualify for other credits. Or as robust as they are for solar. So it really is an incentive for a whole variety of retrofits and remodels for energy efficiency. And the other thing, of course, is commercial buildings in rural communities often don't meet ADA quality or qualifications. They don't have elevators. They don't have ramps. I'll take, for example, the remodel that's going on in a commercial building in John Day. Well, actually, it's a public building. They're finally getting around to installing an elevator. So, you know, there are a lot of buildings that need ADA compliance in order to sort of be brought into the 21st century, and this will help.
One, Mr. Chairman, if I might, just one other follow-up, and this may be pertinent in other committee discussions as well. We did a survey, our national guys did, of energy efficiency in particular. In Oregon, I have one staff person whose job is to promote energy efficiency, green building, Earth Advantage. We partner with Energy Trust. We partner with others in that realm, trying to get builders and their customers to do energy efficient remodels and construction. What our national group found was the overwhelming majority of people who do energy efficiency improvements or new construction do so because of a philosophical belief that it's the right thing to do. It oftentimes doesn't pencil economically. And so if we want to expand that, and if we want to get more solar, we want to get more geothermal, we want to get more wind, we want to get more energy efficiency features in homes and office buildings, given that fact that you've got a finite number of people who are going to do it for the right reasons, in quotes. You've got other people who are going to do it if it makes financial sense. A bill like this helps turn that dial. Unless we have a lot more time than to spend trying to convince people of the right thing to do, we might want to provide some incentive like this to make it worth their while financially, and I think we'd see a dramatic uptick in that sort of improvement.
So if I have a $30,000 solar system I want to put in my house or a $30,000 elevator I want to install in my house, under this bill, it's 50%. I would get a tax credit of $15,000.
No.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
That's not.
Staff has a different opinion.
I have a different opinion.
The energy inefficiency, most projects would be 50%, as I read the bill, most projects would be, the credit would be 50% of certified costs. The exceptions are energy efficiency and ADA compliant would be 100%
right.
credit.
So right.
I assume
right.
an elevator would be ADA compliant.
Right.
A solar elevator would be even better.
We would pay you to put that in.
That's a good amendment. I'd recommend.
As long as we get the patent.
Can we do conceptuals in the Senate still?
Further questions?
Yeah.
Senator Boquist.
I just, in the event we do something, I just want to declare a conflict of interest. I have a daughter that falls under the ADA side, and I am well aware of the failure of government entities who even received grants to do ADA compliance and then spent the money elsewhere and have left ADA individuals stranded, if not endangered, for their lives. So I'm a little biased on this particular one, regardless of the energy side. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Edwards?
Yeah, I was just looking through the bill, and I don't see, is it just any home, or does it need to be owner-occupied, or could a landlord use this tax credit to update a rental that they own? And the reason I ask is because a lot of times landlords, or excuse me, owners, owner-occupied residences are more incentivized to do, because they're paying the energy bills. But landlords are not don't have as much incentive to do energy efficiency upgrades because a tenant is paying the bill, not them. So,
Mr. Chair, there's nothing in the bill that would limit this to owner-occupied properties. The real intent here is to stimulate the retrofit of the housing stock, regardless of who is the occupant.
Just housing.
And
the rental housing.
Retrofitting. Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Edwards, that's my read as well. And you correctly point out, Senator Edwards, that there is a huge disconnect, and particularly on the energy side. I don't know about ADA because I'm not as conversant with those legal requirements, that the housing stock that's out for rent tends to not be upgraded as frequently as housing stock that's owner-occupied for the reasons you stated. Something like this, I think, would help provide an incentive for landlords to do that, and would frankly then inert to the benefit of some of Oregon's citizens that really could use the help.
Senator Riley?
Or as Senator Boquist points out, use this to get the money and then only do part of it, you know. This happens all the time, and we know that. This is a problem.
Further questions, Senator Boquist?
I'll just follow up. I mean, since I know that the public institution should take federal dollars all the time and spend it elsewhere, personal examples, myself, that I'm aware of, is there, in this, what are the bumper boards to prevent or to help in the private sector, I guess, to make sure that we do it right?
I'll
particularly in answer to Senator Riley's.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Riley, this is a credit taken after the fact of the improvements.
And again, as Mr. Chair, Senator Boca, Senator Riley, I'm not as conversant with ADA. I do know on the energy side, you get inspected. And particularly when we're doing, for example, a product that qualifies for Earth Advantage incentives, the building inspector inspects, certifies that it was done. The Earth Advantage folks will inspect and certify it's done after the fact. There may be some leakage, no pun intended, but I don't believe it's very much. And the system is pretty designed to hold people accountable to make sure that those things are, in fact, done as warranted.
Thank you.
Senator Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as we're handing out money, I think there's one additional segment of the population that you might want to consider adding to this. And so ADA would be presumably for businesses, commercial buildings, things like that. There is also a little segment of the population and a growing segment of the remodel world that is focused on making homes not ADA compliant, but retrofitting homes for individuals with disabilities that live at home. And there's all sorts of, I mean, I'm not an expert on it by any means, but there are all sorts of technologies, as we move into the smart home era, installing technologies and building homes so that adults with disabilities can live on their own, but yet be in, have the appropriate supports and safety mechanisms in place. That those things cost a lot of money to put in homes. It's not a really big market. It is growing, but so I don't imagine it would have much financial impact overall on the bill. But I don't know. Seems kind of in the same vein and somewhat meritorious. So.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Edwards, I agree that some of the improvements that could be made, including wheelchair ramps, widening of doorways, retrofitting of bathrooms to put in sort of ADA compliant, but more aimed at the individual need. Those things should qualify. And I'm not sure they don't. I'd have to go back and look at what the language on ADA is. But I certainly would be willing to look at a budget note relative to rulemaking on the implications, or an amendment that would include those kind of improvements. The aim is, of course, to stimulate construction through a tax incentive. The aim is to particularly incentivize Americans with Disability Act accommodations, and those qualify. You know, those are exactly the things that we're after, and more so on the residential side than the commercial side for that type of improvement. So that's the aim of the bill. If that isn't clear in the text, we'd certainly look at an amendment to make it clear.
Okay, there's no one else signed up to testify on this. Why don't we let this breathe for a day or two, carry it over until tomorrow, and then likely send it on to the next station.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you. Closing public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 793. And very quickly, let's send this next bill on. I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 565 for purposes of transmitting it to the Tax Credits Committee.
Mr. Chair, I move 565 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Request the bill referred to the Committee on Joint Tax Credits, and then I'll speak to my motion.
Senator Boquist requests and moves that Senate Bill 565 be referred to the Tax Credit Committee. Discussion, Senator Boquist.
Just to point out that, you know, these tax credits that come to our committee are similar that Senator Edwards has in mine and I have in my other committee. These are policy recommendations that, you know, we look at the policy and not necessarily all of the other issues. And then, of course, once it gets to joint tax credits, it has to be looked as a whole of what that impact is from there. Just for the record. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
Thank you. Yeah, that's right. We're looking at policy. The financial considerations come into play in that next station in life for all of us. Any further discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, Senate Bill 565 is transmitted to the Committee on Tax Credits, and I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 864. Mazin is here with a summary. Senator Whitsitt is always here. Are you here to testify on this? You want to come forward while he goes through this?
Chair, members of the committee, the Senate Bill 864 deals with the issue of the natural resource credit in the estate tax structure. Put on your OLAS two or three pieces of information. The SMS has a general background on how we came to the natural resource credit and how the progress of that since the 2007 session. We could go through it later on if you choose. However, this bill, what it does is expands the estates eligible to claim the natural resource credit from the real property within the state of Oregon to properties in surrounding states that are the California, Idaho, Nevada, and Washington. This is in the second page of your bill, on line 25. So up to now, or before this bill, the current law allows the natural resource property up to $7.5 million of a $15 million estate to be considered a natural resource property eligible for those credits. This primarily will expand the eligibility of the $7.5 million from only Oregon properties to properties that included in those states, the additional neighboring states. However, of course, the $15 million that does not change, and it does not include the properties in California, Idaho, Nevada, and Washington. So I could go a lot more on this subject, Mr. Chair. I think we could have a
full week workshop on this
yes.
section of Oregon tax code, and still not complete at all. Senator Whitsitt, why don't you give us the problem and how this bill seeks to address that problem, if you could.
Thank you, Chair Haas. For the record, I'm Senator Doug Whitsitt, representing Senate District 28, Klamath, Crook, most of Lake Deschutes and Jackson counties. Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 864 corrects the flaw in ORS Chapter 118 that has allowed the Oregon Department of Revenue to interpret the law in a manner that deprives Oregon natural resources states of a credit intended by the legislature. Under ORS 118-140, an estate is allowed a credit toward the estate tax based on the value of certain natural resource property. This credit, however, is available only if the total value of the natural resource property in this state is at least 50% of the total adjusted gross estate. The flaw in 118-140 is that it includes no site limitation on the real property. The statute defines gross estate for the purpose of the estate tax by adopting the definition used in the federal tax code. That definition includes all property wherever situated in the calculation of gross estate. The statute also provides that real property for the purpose of the natural resource credit is limited to property that is in this state. For the purpose of the statute, real property must be located within Oregon in order to fall within the definition of natural resources property subject to the state tax credit. This drafting flaw in the original statute allows the Oregon Department of Revenue to deny the estate tax credit to farmers, ranchers, and foresters who own property in adjoining states that reduces the percentage of natural resource property located in Oregon to less than 50% of the total gross estate. Senate Bill 864 corrects that statutory flaw by defining real property for the purpose of the state tax to include property in the adjoining states of Washington, Nevada, Idaho, and California. For example, a Klamath County rancher owns a ranch in both Oregon and California. The value of the ranch in Oregon is 45% of the total value. The value of the ranch in California is 55% of the total value. The Department of Revenue interprets the law to state that the natural resource credit would not be available to the ranch owner in Oregon because that natural resource estate in Oregon makes up less than 50% of the state. No one should be unfairly penalized in Oregon's tax code due to a drafting error that deprives them of a tax credit that is available to other Oregonians only because their property extends across the state border. That's, in a nutshell, what the problem is.
How many cases are there like that? I mean, it doesn't seem like there's hundreds.
Mr. Chair, I know of three in Klamath County that are either recently resolved or pending. It is very common in the southern part of the state, particularly for cattle ranches, to run cattle in the summertime in Oregon and in the wintertime in California. And so they own ranches in both states. Then when the owner of the estate dies, the current law divides that natural resources estate into the Oregon portion and the California portion, and if the Oregon portion isn't 50%, they lose the credit.
We're only talking contiguous, right? Can't be 100 acres here and then 20 miles, 40 acres in California. We're talking contiguous.
I'm sorry, sir, I can't hear you.
We're talking contiguous, right? They have to be joined. They can't be separated. You can't have in your...
No, no, they're very, very often separated.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a ranch in Fort Klamath, which is, you know, 25 miles north of the California border. And then we might have a California ranch in Pasquetta, which is 250 miles south, you know, in a different climate. And the purpose, of course, of the cattle management is to put the cattle where the grass grows when the grass grows. So the cattle are in Fort Klamath in the summertime or in Bly, and they'll be in Pascantua or Redding or Red Bluff in the winter. So no, they are not contiguous properties.
Okay, questions? Senator Edwards?
And this, I don't know if this is for Senator Whitsitt or Mazin, but the tax credit when it is, so the tax credit, we're talking about that threshold to qualify, but is the tax credit given on the entire estate, or are we talking about qualifying for the tax credit that is on the Oregon portion, but you don't, under current law, you wouldn't, in this scenario, you wouldn't even qualify for that portion?
Chair has, Senator Edwards, it's only for the tax credit, it's only for the portion in Oregon.
Yeah.
There is no way that we can tax land in California, and there's no, and actually, the ownership of land in California, I don't believe even should be taken into consideration, but for the purpose of the bill, if you include that natural resource land in California, then in the natural resource estate, then it's more than 50%.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Senator Roiley?
So let me get this straight. We don't tax the land in California if it's talking about one an owner in Oregon and California. We don't tax the land in California, but we want to count it in order to reduce taxes on land in Oregon. Is that right?
Only for the purpose of the percentage of the natural resource estate. Chair Hassan is writing. The law says that the natural resource estate must make up at least 50% of the entire estate in order to be subject to a credit. Excuse me. In just because the estate is separated by a state line should not alter the fact that perhaps all or 80 or 90% of the estate is actual natural resource estate. So it doesn't change. I mean, there's you're not creating a credit on the estate in California. You're only sustaining the natural resource credit on the natural resource property in Oregon.
Further questions?
I have one.
Senator Boquist?
And I think Mazin had a comment through Mr. Chair. Just for a point of clarification, an example, Senator Edwards pointed out here, and the good proponent of the bill pointed out. I mean, I know not, obviously my counties aren't contiguous to the next door, but, you know, I transport livestock halfway across the state, which unfortunately is not uncommon. But I do know in northeastern Oregon, in the north, we have lots of people that have ranches that are either contiguous or non-contiguous across the border into Idaho and across the border into Washington, because they move cattle off of the winter fields in the low valleys of the Enterprise Valley, and they move them up across the border on to graze, and likewise they grow, because of the rain differential, they grow corn and other things across the border for, they're part of the ranching operation to feed it back across the border. So there's a lot of applications to this that are contiguous across the border. But I guess I do have a question to make sure for clarification, either for staff or for Senator Whitsitt, so we know here. I do believe in looking back at HB 2541 and the original intent of the Oregon Law Commission, this was the intent, it appears to be. It just didn't turn out that way when the bill came out. Am I close here, Counselor?
Senator Boquist, I think, to my understanding, that's the way the law operates. You have the estate valued, and you use the federal definitions to get to a gross estate, and then it's proportioned to what is the Oregon portion of it. Then you take the natural resource credit as part of the portion that is an Oregon portion of the gross estate.
Chuck, I got that the permanent law, but I guess, Senator Whitson, I'm looking at this, and it appears to me you're correct that the Oregon Law Commission, who was asked by the legislature to do a study originally, thought the way we're proposing it in 864 is how it was going to work, and we just kind of missed it. Mm-hmm. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bocas, I believe that's the correct. I don't believe that anybody purposely would have put that into the bill that would have deprived these ranchers of their tax credit. I mean, I don't think it was done on purpose.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to call up Roger Beyer and Katie Fast, and I'm going to excuse myself to go to another committee for a few minutes and
thank you, Mr.
continue
Chair.
With Senator Bocas. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies first, if you would.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau. I think Senator Whitsitt did a very good job of describing the problem that Senate Bill 864 is trying to fix. I do want to share with you that we have received some other areas of the state where families have been disqualified because of land holdings outside of Oregon, but are operated holistically as one farm or ranch. It's very common in agriculture to have properties that are several miles away from the base home place. And that's for different reasons. Either you're raising different crops, expanding your farming operation, and need to be in a different climate, or you're moving cattle to better winter grazing conditions than we have maybe in the Klamath area. And in Klamath and Medford areas, it is very common for these ranches to have properties in California that they're wintering their cattle in. It's very often common in the Treasure Valley to be raising onions or potatoes on both sides of the property or both sides of the state line. When we're looking at that estate value, many times, even though the properties are smaller in the other states, they will have a larger assessed value because of land use laws. And that's very common in what we're seeing in the properties that are in California, that those ranch properties, even though maybe they're not as critical to the ranching operation, they will have a larger appraised value than the Oregon properties for a multitude of different reasons. And that is where families are getting discounted to use the natural resources credit. And, you know, with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee has.
Senator Riley, if you would
please. Yeah, the only, I get it now that we're using the entire estate to figure out what the taxes are. And apportioning it, so that answers my first question from earlier. But I wonder how the other states are taxing these estates. What's the process in these other states on taxing? We're kind of crossing state lines here a lot, and if we don't take into account what's happening in those other states that we're naming here. I don't know how we can make a good informed decision.
Or do you want LRO? I think Mazin's prepared to answer that too.
Thank you.
Senator Riley, the different states have different applications to this. Washington does have a higher estate tax than Oregon. However, California does not. So there is a whole patch of work that deals with this. The natural resource credit is probably one of the Oregon is one of the ones.
What I really want to know is, do those other states use the property in Oregon to, and then apportion, or do they just tax the property that's in their state?
Well, somehow or another, everybody either they use federal definitions.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know.
Or they have their own definitions. Ah. Washington has their own definitions. We have our own ways of doing it. What we do is we only use the IRC for definitions, not for taxation. So we're not connected to the U.S. code, IRC code, for the taxation purpose. We are only connected in a definitional purpose. So once we define what the gross estate tax is, or the gross estate, how much is it worth, then we proportion it to what an Oregon portion is, mm-hmm. and then we tax it on the Oregon schedule. We have a very distinct schedule.
Mm-hmm. But Washington doesn't use that federal definition?
They have their own definition. Washington. So they have to change it all the time. And that we chose to, the Oregon Law Commission chose to make it easier by using the definitions of the federal code only, but not the tax structure of the federal code. So we're not connected.
Thank you, Mazen.
Do you have anything to follow up with that?
Well, I would add that, you know, when you're looking at different states, I think that is important. You know, in California, we do not have an estate tax there. One of my members is going to have to liquidate their California holdings because of this. It has become too much of a liability for them to have that property. And the intent of the law was to keep natural resources properties in the ownership of farm and ranch families. And with this, we are actually losing that.
Senator Birchsick, your question, please.
Thank you, Senator Boquist. Katie, instead of just naming those other states, would it be prudent just to say, or any other state?
Vice Chair Boquist, Senator Birchsicker, you know, I think this bill was brought forward as a small fix to the issue. The people we've been contacted by have been operating in contiguous states. You know, I do know of some ranch families that have properties and move cattle to Montana, but I think it's a very small issue compared to this broader one where people are just working across Oregon state lines.
Senator Edwards, if you would, please.
Thank you. So we're just talking about eligibility for the tax credit that's applied to the Oregon portion of the overall estate. Do I understand that correct?
Yes.
I think that's basically saying we need to extend that tax credit to the other.
I'm trying to play out in my mind under what scenarios it matters if they're contiguous or their natural resource properties in Florida. I mean, because we're just talking about qualification for natural resource tax credit that only applies to the Oregon natural resource property that's a part of their estate.
You have a follow-up there, Senator Riley?
That only applies to the part of the estate that's in Oregon, not the natural resource. So if they qualify, this is just to get them to qualify for the credit, and then that credit would be applied only to the Oregon portion of the estate.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's how I understand it.
That's how I understand it. Thank you.
Okay. So we go. Let's go on to Senator Beyer here first, and then we'll come back to this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing multiple natural resource-based clients, the Oregon Seed Council, the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association, the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, and who have forgotten, Oregon Blueberry Commission. I also did a lot of work on this bill when it last passed in 2011. So I think you've heard a lot about it. There would be another way to fix this issue, and as Mazen has already said, almost every state is different as they treat their estate tax or their inheritance tax. There are probably 50 different systems across the United States, but maybe not that many, because many states in the eastern half of the United States have no estate tax whatsoever. But another way to fix this problem, if you want to talk about the whole thing, would be to change the definition of what the adjusted gross estate is and only count the Oregon property when you're trying to determine the natural resources credit for Oregon properties. I think Senator Riley had it exactly right. What we're trying to do here is just make it so these Oregon properties would be eligible for the credit. Then the percentage would still have to hit the 51% mark of Oregon eligible, however you want to do it. If you decide to include other states, it'd be 51% of the adjusted estate, adjusted gross estate. But if you wanted to just go to a new Oregon definition and say that for determining the natural resources credit, only Oregon properties qualify, when you're making that determination, you would get to the same place that this bill does, but it would be another way to do it.
Yeah.
So with that, I mean, we have members in all those industries. The dairy industry works across the state lines over in the Ontario, the Treasure Valley area. Small woodland owners, specifically on the northern Oregon border between Oregon and Washington. Many properties go across the state line for that. Probably in the grass seed world, there's less multiple state farms, but they do exist. So I think it is a technical fix. I don't believe anyone in 2011 talked about this issue, about how you would deal with multiple state properties when determining the credit. So with that, I'd have to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair, I see how this definitely would, you know, fix the problem. I believe that they did intend for this to be the way it was. Whether I agree with the tax credit or not is a different question. But as to the question is the intent, I believe this does fix the intent of the original bill.
I would concur with that. Other questions? Seeing no other, is there anyone else signed up?
No, that's it.
This is only scheduled for a public hearing today. I do not know the chair's intent, but if there's no one else signed up, we're going to close the public hearing. You are coming. You're not signed up. You were signed up.
No.
You're sitting in the background,
I'm
Jody.
I'm sitting
now
in the background. Jody Weiser for Tax Purchase Oregon. I was at all the meetings of the Estate Tax Commission that worked on this bill, and this concept was never something we discussed. We didn't imagine the problem. Nobody came stating the problem. And so it's not a policy that they looked at. And I think that you're right, that probably this would fix, it would be close to what the intent would have been of that group as they were working, mm-hmm. if it had been an issue that was brought forward. It just, you know, just wasn't thought of. And our farm certainly wasn't contiguous, and it had nothing to do with crops or weather or anything else. It's just when there's land available to buy, you try to get it within 10 miles of where you have all your equipment.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you for the testimony. We're going to close the public hearing on SB 684. Mazen, I don't see our fearless leader over there, but I don't think that there's anything else for today, is there?
No, that's it.
Doing that, gentlemen, I guess we're done for the day. We're done for the day.